Wait, are we doing a true crime podcast again tonight? It seems like we just did this like last week.
We did.
But I always love it when we do these
seems
together.
Seems to be it's a pattern.
After a year, right? We've been doing this for over a year. Do you guys realize that?
Over a year.
Over a year, like 1 week past a year.
Mm-hmm.
And I am here with two of my favorite people in the whole wide world. My name is Scott Wright, and I'm a mediocre journalist.
My name is Kelly Turner, and I'm not a doctor.
I'm Katie Givens, and I'm not a lawyer.
Luckily, none of those professional requirements prohibit us from doing what we're doing tonight. We have been doing this for almost a year now. Actually, 1 week over a year.
Yes.
So it's like 53 weeks that we've been doing this.
It's a long time.
It seems like it. It seems like an eternity.
It's actually gone by pretty fast.
It actually has. I was trying to make fun of you guys, but it's, I mean, every Monday when we do this is one of my favorite things that I do every week. And so I would be remiss if I didn't say that. But in the last couple of weeks, people have started to, and I was just standing in line at the Piggly Wiggly today.
Okay.
Today.
Mm-hmm.
I texted you 2 hours ago, and a gentleman named Brandon Thompson, who is right beside me in the checkout line at the Piggly Wiggly, said, "Hey, aren't you the guy on the podcast?" And I was like, "Yes, I am."
You're like, "Yeah, I'm the only guy on the podcast."
I mean, yeah, well, I should have said that. But he said, "I listen to you guys every week. When are you doing it again?" I said, "I'm headed right now to record another episode of our podcast. We're going to tackle this 4-part series."
Mm-hmm.
"And I think you're going to like it." He's like, "Oh, I know I'm going to like it."
Well, thank you, Brandon.
Brandon Thompson from Cedar Bluff. I assume he's from Cedar Bluff. He was in the Cedar Bluff Piggly Wiggly.
Wow. Drink another one.
He was in the Cedar Bluff Piggly Wiggly today.
That's hard to say. You've had a few podcasts.
Not necessarily, but it just depends on where you've been for the last hour and a half. Especially if you're at Easy Street here on West Main Street in Center, Alabama. That makes it a little bit easier.
Mm-hmm.
And then a couple of weeks ago, a lady named Jody McDaniel Lowry also recognized my voice. She was at Easy Street.
Oh, okay.
You do have a very distinct voice.
Well, I'm not fishing for a compliment, but thank you. I will take it.
You're welcome.
But she is an author. She has written true crime books, and she actually handed me one of her business cards and said, "Hey, if you guys ever want to collaborate, let me know." And so I've got those digits if we want to do that.
You got some digits.
Not in that way, but yes, I did get some digits.
All right, Scott.
All right, whatever. So anyway, we're doing something very unique tonight. We've never done this before. We've never done a 4-part series before, and Kelly Turner is the girl in the driver's seat with the steering wheel and all of the pedals. We're all just sitting in the back of this car waiting for everything fun to happen or everything terrible to happen.
Yeah.
And now it's your turn.
Okay. So welcome everybody back for another episode.
Did I totally screw that up?
No.
We're going to cancel all this, aren't we?
No, you didn't.
Katie's going to cut the whole damn thing.
Well, she's going to cut that part.
Okay.
You just saying that.
Fine.
Yeah.
Well, welcome everybody. Let's get started. That was a wonderful intro, Scott.
All right.
Thank you for that.
Knock it off.
No, you did a great job, and you do. You have a very recognizable voice, and I can understand how people would recognize you when they're out and about.
Quickly,
yeah.
Thank you for that. But quickly, before we get to the next thing, I texted you guys something yesterday about some sort of award show that we might want to get involved in. But it turns out you have to pay for those nominations. So we're gonna shit can that. We're not gonna do it. Mm-hmm. Is that okay? Did you guys trust me to make that determination?
Yeah.
Yes.
So not happening. Raspberry, go ahead.
All right. So as Scott said, this is the beginning of a 4-part series that we're going to do. This case is one of many that we're going to look into from the area of Hampton County, South Carolina. So let's just jump right in, shall we? In the early morning hours of July the 8th, 2015, a man called 911 to report a body lying dead in the middle of Sandy Run Road in Hampton County, South Carolina. The man was on his way to work early that morning when he discovered the body of Stephen Smith, age 19. Now, police are going to arrive moments after this call, around 4 a.m. And they're going to take a look at Stephen and discover that his head is covered in blood. He has a 7-inch gash on his head. His skull was crushed. There was a hole in his forehead and his shoulder was dislocated. Police first believed that this was a hit and run and called the highway patrol about 6 a.m. However, after investigating the scene, they called in the State Law Enforcement Division, also known as SLED, in South Carolina. Mm-hmm. SLED's going to get there about 6:45 a.m. And because there was so much blood and because of this gaping hole in Stephen's forehead, police initially reported that he was shot. However, they searched the crime scene and they determined that he died from blunt force trauma to the head and not a gunshot. Now, this crime scene is a mystery from the beginning. There are no bullet fragments to be located, no gunpowder, no residue to be found, no weapon whatsoever. Just a dead body in the middle of this country
pretty
road.
Much in the middle of the road.
Absolutely in the middle of the road. And as they continued to search the area, they realized that there were no car parts in the road, no broken glass as if from maybe a car mirror or window, no paint chips, no skid marks on the road. Stephen's loosely tied shoes were still on his feet.
Which is a huge marker of being hit by a car that, from what I've read, is your shoes come off.
Yes. And the highway patrol says this. This is highly unusual.
That's a violent collision. I mean, your body gets tossed and turned in ways it would normally be, and things fly off. I mean, inertia takes over at that point.
And your body breaks parts of the car.
Right.
That would be found near the crime scene. Exactly. His phone and his keys were still in his pocket. And his car was found about 3 miles from where his body was found. The gas can was open. It was open and kind of hanging from the car.
Like you'd
run out of gas.
The gas cap.
The cap. What did I say?
You said the can.
The can. The gas cap. The gas cap was hanging from the car. Right, right. All right. So the highway patrol says none of this is typical of a vehicle hit and run as far as his shoes on his feet, his things still in his pocket, no evidence of a car being there. They're now going to suspect foul play.
Would you go so far as to say staged?
Some law enforcement will use that phrase.
Okay. All right.
So in South Carolina, an autopsy must be performed by a pathologist who is also a medical doctor, so not me, to determine the cause and manner of death. So Stephen's body was turned over to Dr. Aaron Presnell, a pathologist at the University of South Carolina, for an autopsy. Now, Dr. Presnell is going to rule this a hit and run, contrary to what all of the law enforcement are saying. And Dr. Presnell states that due to the condition of his head, the fact that no bullets were found, that it must have been a hit and run. And there are a lot of people who have seen crime scene photos who report that his head was warped. I mean, it was very badly damaged.
Okay.
From this blunt force trauma.
Okay.
Now, Stephen's toxicology report was clean, meaning he was sober when he was killed. So for this to have been a hit and run, he's going to stand on this dark country road in the middle of the road with his phone and his keys in his pocket with loosely tied shoes and a big truck. This is kind of what they theorized. A big truck is going to come by. Now, how long on a dark country road will you see lights from a big truck, a big 18-wheeler or a big pickup truck?
There's a long straightaway in both directions.
You ever heard the phrase, you can see that from a mile away?
Exactly.
This is where it comes from.
This is not some crazy, windy country road. It's a long, straight.
It's a straight shot. Yeah.
Pitch of road.
What's also suspicious to me is his phone being in his pocket. Like, if you're out in the dark like that,
wouldn't you be using it for light?
Right. You'd have it out.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And this is July of 2015. So everyone has a cell phone in their pocket.
Stephen has a cell phone.
Yes.
And So he's going to stand there and he's going to see the truck coming and he's not going to move and he's going to be sober and he's going to let the truck hit him.
Sounds suspicious.
Wow.
Yeah.
So anyways, the highway patrol strongly disagrees with Dr. Presnell's ruling of it being a hit and run, as well as the coroner disagrees that it was a hit and run. They believe that this was a homicide. So regardless, though, the highway patrol has to take this case because it is ruled a hit and run.
Is now, there jurisdiction on the highway?
Yeah, because if it's ruled a hit and run, that's their bag. So
which is like their only bag. Like homicide is not their
no,
forte.
They have absolutely no skills
good
in this kind of investigation. They can recreate accidents. And what they're saying is based on looking at this crime scene and attempting to recreate something, they got nothing.
Right.
There's no evidence there to help them recreate anything that happened involving a vehicle.
Okay.
So they still have to take this case and they're going to try to do the best that they can with it.
Due diligence.
Mm-hmm. Now, some law enforcement officials, as I said, they were thinking that a large truck came by and the mirror of the truck struck him in the head. Now, I just kind of did a little research on myself. I'm not sure exactly how tall Stephen was.
He wasn't.
I'm about 5'9".
He was probably absolutely not any taller than you are.
So I was standing just in my garage the other day and my Tahoe mirror would hit me almost in the shoulder.
Right.
And I go over to, Kevin has a Tundra.
Your husband who does not listen to this
podcast. No, he doesn't listen. But so I go over to his mirror and it would still hit me almost like in the neck. Mm-hmm. The mirrors have to be taller. So it would have to be something like an 18-wheeler
like or a like semi truck
or a jacked up truck.
Yeah.
You know, with those big mirrors sticking out to get the type of damage.
Like a normal hot person in the face.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. So it couldn't have been your average SUV that hit him.
Yeah.
If you're talking a mirror from a vehicle hit him, mm-hmm. although the highway patrol has said, no, that's not what happened to him.
Okay. That just made me think of a couple of questions, but we'll wait. I'm going to write them down. You go ahead.
Okay. So who was Stephen Smith? Stephen Smith was 19 years old at the time that he died. He was a nursing student. Now, Stephen was a twin. He had a twin sister. And his mother, Sandy, said that Stephen loved to read. She even said in an interview that, quote, his room looks like a library.
Aww.
Any extra bit of money that he had, he spent on books, all kinds of books. And he loved to read. He wanted to be a doctor, but he knew that his family couldn't afford medical school. So he was going to start with becoming a nurse and just kind of step it up and pay his own way after he became a nurse and started working.
You can make decent money as a nurse and maybe get yourself through
medical school. That was his plan.
Okay.
Now, Stephen was openly gay and he had reportedly been harassed for that in this small little country town and allegedly was harassed on the night of his death. The Smith family had an open casket funeral so that everyone could see what had been done to Stephen. And his mother said that his head had to be reconstructed with putty for the funeral. It was it was damaged badly. Jeez. That's why when they saw all the blood and the damage, they're initially thinking gunshot to the head.
Okay.
And then they don't find a bullet. There's no bullet fragments. And then the pathologist, you know, Dr. Presnell, you know, when there was no bullet, then she just went to hit and run.
An easy explanation. Mm-hmm. Move on to the next thing for the pathologist.
Right. Now, his death has never been fully explained. Some of the police files say that, or they theorize that he ran out of gas, as I said, about 3 miles from where he was found, and the gas cap was hanging from the car. But Stephen's mother says that he would never walk alone on a dark country road in the middle of the night. She said he was a very cautious boy. And part of that is because he was openly gay and had dealt with the harassment. Now, we live in small southern town USA.
Yes.
So we understand that.
We do.
That's unfortunately still an issue. And so he was a cautious person. And she says there's no way that he would be walking in the middle of the road on this dark country road at night. She said he had his phone. She's quick to point out he had his phone. He could have called someone to come and get him.
Yeah.
Yeah, that is, I mean.
Someone just, could have been there quickly.
Yeah, and he would have. Why would, why isn't he calling somebody?
And the exactly. ABC 2020 documentary that I watched said, they confirmed the car was out of gas.
The car was out of gas.
Yes. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, he had a legitimate reason for his car to be stalled on the side of the road. He's 6 miles from home. And that's where the confusion begins.
And that is the confusion because he's so close to home. Why not just call and say, I've run out of gas?
Somebody can be there in 5 minutes.
Well, exactly.
Can we talk about why is his gas cap off? Like, he doesn't have a gas can there. He's not opening the gas cap to check the gas levels. That's not a thing.
That is weird.
Now that you mention it, that is kind of weird. Because you wouldn't need to remove that gas cap until you return from the local convenience store. And maybe he didn't want to wake up his mom at 4 a.m. because it was 4 a.m. when that call came in that his body had been seen in the road by a guy named Ronnie Capers, who called into 911 and then proceeded to drive down the road and said, hey, there's a boy in the road.
Now, Ronnie says he calls and says, somebody's going to hit him.
Yes.
And it's okay. We're going to get somebody down there.
Right.
But Ronnie claims he was on his way to work.
Yeah.
When they interviewed him.
Fair enough.
At first, I thought, why didn't he stop and stay around? But he's on his way to his job.
Yeah, maybe. And if he's late for work one more day, he's out of a job. So he's got to go.
I don't know. That's...
I know.
Of course, it's frowned upon.
That struck me, too.
They apparently looked into Ronnie and cleared him. He went to work and that was that. Now, tips are going to start coming in, and they're going to start doing some interviews. Police interviewed an older man who identified himself as Stephen's boyfriend. And he says that he spoke with Stephen the night of his death, and that Stephen told him that he was going to, quote, run out of gas. He's going to run out of gas. And Stephen also told him that he was, quote, being harassed by some guys in a pickup truck. So those are the two things that you can pull from this man's very long and rambling interview.
Very rambling.
That are pertinent.
Yes.
Okay.
And now this man, his interview is very hard to listen to. He claims to have a head injury. He also claims to have a long history of drug use. And he's just kind of all over the place when he's talking. But those are the two very interesting things that he says. That Stephen says, I'm going to run out of gas, and that it says that he's being harassed by guys in a pickup truck. Now, Stephen's family strongly denies that this older man was his, quote, boyfriend.
Okay.
They maybe go so far as to admit maybe they had, you know, a fling or something, but that this man was not his boyfriend. And it could be this man has a kind of a checkered past as far as the substance use and things like that. And so maybe they just don't want Stephen associated with him. But this man also claimed to be the one who was paying for Stephen's phone. In one of the podcasts that I listened to about this case, he claimed to pay for Stephen's phone. So their relationship, they had some sort of relationship.
Yeah.
Yes, obviously.
Mm-hmm. But the family does acknowledge that Stephen was harassed for being gay. In fact, that's why they had the open casket. His mother, in interviews, truly believes that this was some sort of hate crime because of Stephen being openly gay. And that's why they had the open casket to show the community what happened to their son.
I would love to say that I think that mother was being ridiculous, but there's a good chance she probably wasn't.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Absolutely. So Stephen's twin sister, she says that he told her that he had been involved with a boy at one point in time, and that boy was, quote, privileged. Now, he never said who this boy was that he was involved with.
I didn't see that coming.
But he did say that he was involved with a privileged boy. Now, in Hampton County, it's not a whole lot different in this, in from our Cherokee County, in the sense of there is a pretty big gap between the haves and the have-nots.
Mm-hmm. Fair statement.
There's a lot of money in Hampton County, and a few people have it. And then there are a lot of folks who are not as well off. And Stephen's family were some of the family who were not as well off.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's why he was, you know, making this statement to his sister that this is a privileged boy.
Hampton County, in many ways, very similar to Cherokee County. I mean, it's a small county. There's about 21,000 people in Hampton County as far as the 2020 census goes.
Mm-hmm.
And the county seat is a town called Hampton in Hampton County,
mm-hmm.
about 4,000 people, very similar to the size of Center, mm-hmm. which is our county seat.
And in that census, I believe they said there were a total of about 595 families in Hampton County.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
So, and it revolves around the water. Mm-hmm. Much, again, like Cherokee County does. We have mm-hmm. a big lake in the middle. It's kind of the low country in that part of South Carolina, but a lot of people spend time on boats. I'm guessing in weeks ahead we will get to that. But
well, Hampton County doesn't even have a Walmart.
They do not, and I'm actually going to.
Oh, I don't want to.
I'm going to get into all that. I was actually going to give that census data and get into all
I'm
that.
Sorry.
So that, no, that's Kelly. Why we're all thinking on the same page.
Okay,
so that's
good.
Great.
Right.
So Todd Proctor from the Highway Patrol, who was investigating this case, obtained a search warrant for Stephen's phone and phone records. He states in the affidavit that, quote, the investigation has led to this individual not being struck by a vehicle and possible foul play. So they're very out there with the fact that he was not hit by a vehicle.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yep. Now, as far as I can find and anything I've listened to, anything that I have read, nothing has come from this search warrant or from the phone records. In fact, there was some dispute over the chain of custody with Stephen's phone.
With all of his possessions, right?
His clothes, his body. I mean, they, you know, when he was turned over from having the autopsy, the Highway Patrol first, they didn't know where his body was.
No.
I mean, they've got to investigate this. They didn't know where it was. So they find out it's at the funeral home and Stephen's things are in a paper bag there. I mean, the crime scene is just shot.
Oh, yeah.
At this point.
Yeah, they don't know.
Yeah.
So chain of custody is broken on several things, allegedly, during this case. Mm-hmm. And it could just be, at the very least, it's just crappy police work. I hate to say that because the Highway Patrol has no business investigating this.
And they don't want to be investigating.
They don't want to be investigating this.
That's not their job.
No.
Technically. I mean, I'm sure there's an investigative division.
Well, it's become their job only because they've been forced to do it.
They've been forced to.
Yeah. And they keep saying, this is wrong, but here we are.
Yes. I mean, they showed up to the scene and did their job mm-hmm. and said, not a hit and run, guys.
Don't give it to us. Somebody else
and
is
even
in charge
the other law enforcement there agreed and said, no, you guys don't even have to.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, this is not a hit and run. Don't worry about it. Whoopsie. Now they have it. Now they have to investigate.
I'm guessing this is something we are going to circle back in episodes down the road.
Maybe.
Yeah. Okay. Got it.
I'm
with you.
Several tips are going to come in. And there's a name that keeps coming up in those tips. And that name is Buster Murdoch. Now, Buster Murdoch was a classmate of Stephen Smith's in high school at Wade Hampton High School. Notes in the file state that police tried to contact Buster Murdoch, but no answer. And his voicemail was full. Then they tried to email him, but no replies. Now, multiple sources are reporting that Buster and his, quote, buddies may be responsible for this death. In fact, the Murdoch name comes up more than 40 times in the process of interviewing this.
People who may have some information or knowledge about what they think might have happened.
I can just tell you, the rumors are flying.
Got it.
The rumors are flying. And okay. Then more than half of the people interviewed, 10 out of 18, had heard the same rumor. That Buster Murdoch was secretly gay and involved with Stephen Smith at some point. Now, this is all rumor.
Conjecture.
So, mm-hmm. The interviews, of course, as I said, they're based on rumors. They have no solid evidence to link Buster to this crime or really to even link him to Stephen, other than the fact that they were classmates in high school at Wade Hampton High. So you've got the issue of the wrong agency trying to investigate this. They don't have any solid evidence, and Buster won't talk to them. He won't call them back. He's not emailing them back. Now, Stephen's twin sister told Fitz News that Randy Murdoch, who is Buster Murdoch's uncle, was the second person to call her father on the day of Stephen Smith's death after the coroner. So think about that. Randy Murdoch, who is a lawyer in Hampton County.
A very prominent.
Yeah, in Hampton County.
Local attorney.
South Carolina, was the second person they heard from after the coroner.
Mm-hmm.
So I reached out to Katie in my research of this, and I said, Katie, how common is this for a lawyer to be the second person that reaches out to a family when someone dies on the highway?
Can I guess?
Katie?
I mean, it's decently common. I mean, it's definitely tacky to not wait as long. I mean, should have waited longer, but I mean, this is how they make their living. They're personal injury attorneys and
okay.
And if wrongful death attorneys, who are you talking about? I promise you, we are going to dive into the Murdoch family.
Yeah, I mean,
what you need to know right now is Randy Murdoch is a lawyer who has contacted this family, and he is the uncle of Buster Murdoch.
Yeah, we will sate your thirst before this 4-part series.
Oh yeah, we got you. Yeah.
We're as confused as you guys are right now.
Mm-hmm. So lawyers do contact families who have lost a loved one due to a hit and run on the highway, you know, because that's the way it was ruled.
Mm-hmm.
So this is maybe at first you look at it and you go, that's pretty fishy. But I think you're going to find that it's very fishy once we get deeper.
Well, if they're assuming the story, an 18-wheeler did this, then that's, you know.
If you think about the company that owns the 18-wheeler.
If you want to get a payout from somebody, you want, you know, there's always the joke that if I'm going to get hit, I want to get hit by a Coke truck.
Ooh.
Yeah, because they have really good insurance.
Right.
Yeah.
That's a big payout, I'm assuming.
I get that reference in that. That method of operation.
If you're trying to make it not suspicious, there is a logical explanation.
Okay.
Somewhat.
And as we are going to come to learn, this is how the Murdochs make their living.
Yeah.
Okay. So
there's a hint.
Yes. Stephen's mother found, now notice I said his mother found this in his car, found a key pass to a gated community in Hilton Head, South Carolina. Now, police didn't find this. She did. The police contacted the owner of the house, the gated, you know, key and everything. He said that he and Stephen had a one-night stand, but they never hooked up again. He did admit to calling Stephen and texting him after Stephen had passed away, because he did not know that Stephen had passed away. Now, he is significantly, allegedly, older than Stephen. Mm-hmm. That's what they're saying. He's an older man. It was a one-night stand.
Well, Stephen's 19 admits, when he passed away.
He admits to having a one-night stand with Stephen.
Okay.
Recently. And one of the rumors that some of the people who are being interviewed talk about is Stephen was running from an older man who was upset with him on the night that he died. So here's an older man that he has a recent connection to. And according to the Murdoch Murders podcast, they're reporting they did not even get an alibi for this man.
For that person.
On the night of Stephen's death.
It seems like that's going to be a song that we are all going to know all the words to before this is over.
Mm-hmm.
Investigations that did not do their due diligence.
Yep. And so they've not spoken to Buster, whose name has come up 40 times.
Right.
They don't get an alibi for this guy. And then they bring the other guy who's older and claims to be Steven's boyfriend. And they do interview him, and he must have checked out. But that was one of the big rumors. Okay. There was a rumor that Buster and some of his buddies had something to do with it. They were the ones harassing him, and they had something to do with Steven's murder. And then there was a rumor that he was running from an older man who was upset with him.
Well, you just made me realize what a glancing blow that the 2020 documentary that I watched did at this whole fucking thing, because they tried to find a way, and I wrote this down. They tried to make this overproduced and ostentatious from the beginning, and I don't know how much of a fan I am of 2020 after this, because you have lifted the blinds from my eyes about a lot of things about this, and we're just on the very first week of a four-part series.
Yeah, and I can tell you, if you go to fitsnews.com, you can find some really interesting stories, and if you listen to the Murdoch Murders podcast, it's a very deep dive.
Which I have not done yet.
It's a very deep dive. And
she's not a mediocre journalist.
Oh, well, see, that explains everything.
And she goes very deeply into the Stephen Smith case, even more deeply than we're going to be able to go into.
Wow. Yeah, so anyways, very enlightening.
Yeah, so this man, this interview really led to nothing. And then in 2016, Stephen's case goes cold. There's no new leads. It's never turned over to SLED. Remember, I talked about the state law enforcement division. It's never turned over to them for them to investigate. Cold case. So who are the Murdochs? Well, first of all, if you notice, it's spelled M-U-R-D-A-U-G-H. And you're like, Kelly,
which is confusing.
You're saying that wrong, but it is pronounced Murdoch, despite the spelling. So let me give you a history on who they are and why their name is so important in South Carolina. In 1920, a Murdoch became the solicitor of the 14th Judicial Circuit. Now, a Murdoch is going to hold this position in the 14th Judicial Circuit until 2006. Now, did you get that timeline, Scott?
I'm working on it.
1920.
I'm writing it down. 1920 to 2006, 14th Circuit.
Yep. And now, how many years is that having a Murdoch?
That's 86 years.
As a solicitor.
86.
Okay. All right. Now, a solicitor is like a DA.
That's what we would call a district attorney.
Mm-hmm. Yes. The solicitor is considered to be one of the most powerful positions in the South Carolina judicial system. Katie, do you have anything you want to add to this?
No. You're nailing it.
Tell me when I'm wrong, okay? Mm-hmm. The Murdochs have been one of the most prominent families in the state of South Carolina, and many in Hampton County will tell you that the Murdochs are the law. Now, we talked a little bit about Hampton. Hampton, and Scott gave us some 2020 census information.
Well, I half-assed it. You want me to do it again? Why don't you do it?
Well,
this is your ball of wax.
As of the 2020 United States Census, there were 2,694 people, 1,139 households, and 595 families residing in the town. It's the county seat of Hampton County. The town and the county are named after Wade Hampton III, a Confederate general in the Civil War. Hampton has a vanishing industry and is one of the poorest counties in South Carolina. It has a reputation of siding with plaintiffs and awarding an unusually high amount for damages.
Yeah, that's a crazy statistic about how many plaintiffs win cases in this county. Like,
really, such a small county, but cases get brought there and the jury sides with the defendant.
Well, jury or judge. Not the defendant, with the plaintiff.
Oh, with the plaintiff.
Not only sides with them, but offers payouts.
The plaintiff, of course, yes.
Mm-hmm. Huge payouts.
Okay.
Now, the Murdoch family law firm files the majority of those lawsuits, earning big money for themselves as well as their clients, allegedly pocketing 50% of every big settlement.
Wow, that's high. Isn't it, Katie?
Yeah, well, yes. Most of the time, like when you get any kind of personal injury attorney, it's probably 40%. I think that's industry standard.
Okay.
But from my research on this, the Murdochs do 50% because their win percentage is so high and the amount that they win these people is so high that people will still use them even though their percentage is higher because they trust them to win.
Sure.
Mm-hmm. They're still going to come out with more money.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
Walmart allegedly decided not to come to this area.
Ah.
Yeah. Okay. I don't mean to spoil anything.
Because,
no, no. I'm glad we circled back to that. I was curious.
Did. Yeah. Because it is known as a judicial hellhole.
Ah, okay.
And they were allegedly advised by their attorneys to avoid this area because if they were to get involved in one of these lawsuits, it could put the entire industry in South Carolina at risk.
Looks like a good place for a slip and fall.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Now, Walmart was afraid.
If Walmart says, fuck this, maybe it's not a good place to hang out.
Yeah. So,
because they'll go anywhere.
Right. In South Carolina, you can be the solicitor and maintain your private practice. So the Murdoch family has controlled both sides of the law since 1920.
Yeah, which is, that's not normal.
So I can be the DA and a civil defense attorney.
You can be on both
sides.
A
civil defense attorney. Katie, am I saying that right?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
I can sue you for negligence. And still be the DA.
Yep. They deep pockets, lots of law enforcement friends, and lots of land in South Carolina.
Seems like we're all picking a side on this, but...
Now, the Murdochs had wealth long before they were lawyers. Randolph Murdoch's father, Josiah Putnam Murdoch II.
That sounds like an old man.
Made his first fortune in phosphate mining and the commercial fertilizer industry in Charleston County before getting into real estate development in Beaufort and Hampton counties.
Somebody get her a handkerchief after that.
In 1910, Randolph Murdoch graduated from law school and returned to Hampton, South Carolina to go into private practice. The firm he founded would become the present day Peters, Murdoch, Parker, Eltsroth, and Dietrich, or PMPED.
All right.
In 1920, he was the first man elected to the office of solicitor of the 14th Judicial Circuit, covering 5 counties and 200 square miles. The PMPED law firm went on to become one of the largest personal and vehicular injury firms in South Carolina. So circling back around to why initially that might not have been as fishy with Randy Murdoch.
If there's a death on the highway and we do vehicular injuries, let me grab my phone and make a phone call here before someone else does.
You make a phone call every... I'm sure they make a phone call every time.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So they made their money from a South Carolina law stating that personal injury plaintiffs who are South Carolina residents may file a suit in any county in which an out-of-state company owns property or conducts business. So you can also forum shop. This is the practice of choosing the court or jurisdiction that has the most favorable rules or laws for the position being advocated. A party can forum shop when more than one court has jurisdiction over the dispute, choosing the court that gives it an advantage over the opposing party. So, Hampton County is a great place to pay out. And as a South Carolina resident, you can file a suit in any county in which an out-of-state company owns property or business.
There. I think the phrase that Katie is probably taking in a breath to say, and her husband would say if he was here in this room with us right now, is ambulance chasers. Is that too strong to say?
No, I mean, that's what they are, sure.
They're ambulance chasers. I mean, good God. He called the family of a dead boy in the road right after the coroner and said, hey, if you want to cash out on this, I'm your man.
He offered to take the case for free. Now, let me throw that twist in there.
Yeah.
What?
I was holding that back.
To not even take his 50%?
Yeah, I was holding that back.
Or is for free... a lawyer speak for, I'm not going to charge you unless you win and then I'm taking half.
That's how all personal injury things work. So
it's probably that. Yeah. It's probably that he was going to wait until there was a payout and then take his part.
If John's dump truck company ran over you and I get him for $100 million, I get 50. And maybe that's a high number. I get 10 million. I keep 5. You get the other 5.
But that's still not how you phrase that. He said he would do it for free.
Yes, because he was so upset over...
He just wanted to get them their money.
He just wanted to help them out.
I'm sensing the suspicion that we all have here.
So back to this firm, PMPED, and the building of this firm, okay? So this firm was so successful at suing the railroad company CSX that their huge building they have in downtown Hampton is known as the house that CSX built.
Oh, wow.
And that's the railroad. Uh-huh. CSX is the railroad.
Randolph Sr. became very powerful. So he was the solicitor in, you know, the new position in 1920. And then he had this practice, the house that CSX built. And then in a strange twist of irony, Randolph Sr. was killed in a train accident in 1940.
Oh, now that is the definition of irony.
Yeah.
His car stalled while traveling over a train track. And it was
on the railroad tracks.
Yeah.
Was the door broken? Maybe he should have sued Henry Ford instead.
I don't know.
He wasn't here anymore to sue anyone.
So his son is Randolph Murdoch Jr., who they called Buster. Now, don't get confused, because the Buster this is the old original Buster.
Buster, okay? Sounds like a name that would get passed down.
Yes. Yeah. And so,
sadly,
his son, Randolph Buster Murdoch Jr., took over the practice and the public office. So he took the practice and the solicitor's office.
They were like, your dad's gone. You just have this job.
He served as the solicitor from 1940 to 1986.
46 years.
I can do the math on that. That's 46 years.
Randolph Buster Murdoch Jr. was the solicitor.
That's how old I was 6 years ago.
So Randolph the Third held the title of assistant solicitor under his dad. Okay, so let me build this family tree for you, Scott.
I think there's only one stem on it, but go ahead.
You have Randolph Sr., who died in the train accident in 1940, who was the solicitor. Mm-hmm. Then you have Randolph Jr., who took over in 1940. Mm-hmm. Now, he's going to serve that ridiculous
46
long.
Years.
Yes. Now, during that time, his son, Randolph the Third, he's going to appoint him assistant solicitor. Nepotism. And then Randolph the Third is going to take over as solicitor in 1986, mm-hmm. following his dad. Okay. Now, Randolph the Third's son is Richard Alexander Murdoch.
And that's Alec.
That's Alec Murdoch.
Okay.
Alec worked in the solicitor's office under his dad and continued the private practice. And Alec acted as a volunteer prosecutor there until September of 2021.
What the hell is a volunteer prosecutor? What is that?
I don't know.
It's like, if you run out of prosecutors, I'll come do it too.
I'll just do it. I'm going to help dad out.
Okay.
So this is when, in September of 2021, this is when the Murdoch's holding of private practice and public office officially came to an end, because even though Alec Murdoch was not, quote, the solicitor, he was very, very involved in the office and had a lot of influence over it, because the family had been in that office since it was invented.
He knew everybody in town. His Rolodex was full back when everyone still had a Rolodex on their desk.
Oh, yes.
Katie will tell you what a Rolodex is after the show.
So this,
thank you.
Kelly and I know.
So this Randy Murdoch that we keep bringing up is the brother of Alex Murdoch. And this Buster Murdoch, whose name comes up 40 times when people are being interviewed about the death of Stephen Smith.
Okay.
Buster is Alec Murdoch's son.
And he's, what, a couple of years older than Stephen Smith was? 2 or 3 or 4 years
older?
No,
they're older. The same age.
They're classmates.
Same age. Okay.
They're classmates.
Gotcha.
So at the time, he's 19 years old.
Gotcha.
So Randy is the uncle that's called the family and offered to help for free and, you know,
okay,
all of that stuff. So if you don't understand everything I've just said, hit pause, back us up a few minutes, get out a pen and paper,
yeah,
and write down that family tree.
Yeah, just start in the middle and just do like lines here and another circle, but it all makes sense. I've watched.
So you've got Randolph. Mm-hmm. Alec.
But that's all before
Randy.
Now, is Buster. Randy Randolph the fourth?
Randy is, I don't know.
The Randy who calls Stephen Smith's parents.
No. I know who he is. I'm saying, is he Randolph the fourth?
Is he like another?
He might be the fourth. Yeah. I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know.
But he is Alec's brother, and Alec is the father of Buster, and Buster is the...
The name that keeps coming
classmate up. Classmate of Stephen Smith, who died in the middle of the road on July the 8th.
2015. Yeah, Randy is Randolph the fourth, so he's the oldest of him and Alec, and so it's Randy and then Alec, and so...
There is another brother, but we
John. His name is John.
Okay. So there you go. So take notes there, everybody. That's part of
the
Murdoch family.
We're not just throwing names at you to confuse you. All of this is going to matter. And Kelly has got this fantastic 4-part series figured out, and she's got it all mapped out. And before we're done, Kelly, tell me if I'm saying anything I shouldn't say, because I'm not sure the way you're looking at me right now. But all of these names, this is all important.
I gave you those names for a reason.
Yes, correct.
I gave you that family tree for a reason.
Write that down. Hang on to it. Yes.
So Stephen Smith's case remains unsolved to this day. Now, there are many theories, and let's just take a second and go back over those theories. Number one, he ran out of gas. He got out and walked and was hit by a truck.
That's what the state of South Carolina, that's what SLED...
That's what the doctor, the pathologist ruled.
Yes, the pathologist.
The Highway Patrol says this was a homicide.
Got it.
Another theory is that he was being harassed and chased by some guys in a truck. Mm-hmm. Like he told his, not sure, but this guy that claims he was his boyfriend.
The older guy in this scenario.
Right, and they murdered him and left him in the road. Mm-hmm. And then there's this other theory of he was running from an older man who was upset with him, and this individual killed him and left him in the road. Now, those are just, there are more theories out there than those, but those are the three most popular ones.
I just don't know why, if I wanted to get rid of someone, I would leave them laying in the middle of the road.
It just sounds like,
stop the car.
The dumbest ass criminal ever. But
throw them
still
in the ditch.
It seems to be working,
but it seems to work.
You're right.
Yeah.
You know what? I hate to admit it, but Katie's right. So far, it's fucking still working.
Yeah, still unsolved.
Yeah. 7 years later.
Right. The most common theory involves the guys who are harassing in the truck and killed him, and that's where Buster Murdoch's name comes up. Now, that's the most common theory involving Buster Murdoch, a member of one of the most notorious families in South Carolina history.
As it turns out.
So for the entire month of May, we will cover cases. Yes, cases, plural, connected to the Murdoch family. We could do an entire season on this family, and many podcasters have done this. But we have chosen to use the month of May. Now, this saga begins in 2015, as we have discussed in this episode. And it's still going on today. So we will most likely have updates in the future about the Murdoch family.
Yes, it is very much ongoing.
It seems like, it changes almost. I mean, I saw some updates, and I'm not going to spoil anything, but just from a couple of days ago about new developments in this case.
Yes, there are new developments in many of the cases that surround the Murdoch family.
Yeah.
And unfortunately, Stephen Smith is one of those. And and I wish we had a way to tie this up in a nice bow for you, but we don't. And Sandy, Stephen's mother, is adamant that this was a hate crime, and she feels like it was privileged individuals. So she leans more towards Buster and some of his friends who may have been involved. Now, I do want to say this. In some of the interviews that I have listened to when the Highway Patrol was conducting these interviews and they were talking with different people who were also classmates of Buster and Stephen.
Okay. I'm curious about this.
And a couple of them say that they're kind of shocked that Buster's name is the one that's being used because it's out of character for Buster.
Okay.
Now, they will give another name that they would say. Now, if you said Paul Murdoch, that wouldn't shock me. Who is Paul? Paul Murdoch is Buster's younger brother.
I'm guessing we're going to get to that.
To be continued.
All right. Well, that's part one of who, listen, this could go on for months. I mean, we've said it's going to be a 4-part series, right? Mm-hmm. I don't know why we couldn't just do this all damn summer.
We could.
We really could. And like Katie said a minute ago, it just seems like every week something new pops up about this thing. It literally could go just on and on and on.
This is one of those incidences where you have the truth is much stranger than fiction.
Yes.
I mean, this is not a fictional novel that we're reading to
yeah,
you.
Yeah, we did not make this up, people.
No, because you're going to ask yourself that over the course of May as we make our
M-U-R-D-A-U-G-H. Google it. We are not making this up.
Exactly.
Good night, everybody.